thick. To the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me virtually, as always, is Max. Right now, I am sitting and staring out at beautiful Myrtle Beach. We are recording remotely, so we're going to have some severe lag on this episode. So I'm just going to give you, Max, a few like unbroken minutes to kind of monologue, kind of do like a tight five to set up the episode. So go ahead. Can you tell us about airplane food?
I don't know what's up with it, man. I'm looking at post-rain Columbus. We had some nice rain here yesterday, which is always fun. But unfortunately, it was overnight, so I didn't even get like a good thunderstorm sound in. You're frozen, and it's very funny. Oh, you moved. Stop. The more you move, the more bits and bytes you have to. Your computer has to send to mine, and that's
like motion makes it more difficult for the computer to process.
Oh, it's like how when you watch like a movie where the bit rate has been lowered a whole bunch, and it like you just get those big gray chunks where nothing's moving.
Right, starts to crumble apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, this will be a weird one, but I am excited because you have sent me some notes of what you want to discuss today. It is not rain-related, but it is death-related. Max, why don't you tell the fine listeners what you have for us today?
I guess, are you just not going to talk about the fact that you're about to die parasailing on air?
Oh, yeah, I suppose I should get into that, huh? So we're trying to scramble through and record this episode very quickly because in about an hour, I'm going to leave, hopefully just this resort and not this plane of existence, because I'm going parasailing, which if you don't know what parasailing is, it is where a boat pulls you while you have a parachute strapped to you and the parachute lifts you up. I'm actually looking out my window of my resort as we record, and I see someone up 300 feet in the air parasailing. I see this happening right now, and there is a deep terror that is starting to settle in my soul of what I am about to do today. So thank you guys so much for listening to the last ever episode of Pre-Dead Boys. I will almost certainly have passed due to heart attack or just like nosediving 300 feet into the water. Just know that I died doing what I love. Reckless, stupid shit.
There we go. That's a lead-in if I've ever heard one.
Maybe that's why I was like trying to breeze over it, because the more I think about it, the more scared I get.
Okay. If that's how you feel, we should probably talk about the opposite of extreme sports with our topic today. And I mean, this is near and dear to my heart, but today we're going to be talking about veneration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, like, I know I've talked a couple times on the podcast about growing up Catholic, and I think we've both made it pretty clear where we're at now, but like growing up, I went through like CCD courses, and I learned so much about saints and saint relics. And I was fascinated with like incorruptibility and saint relics and all this stuff. I think we touched on it briefly during our episode on lying in state, but I genuinely am very excited to dig deeper into this. And since we're going to be talking a lot about dead people staying dead in big stately churches, I think that is probably about as far from parasailing as you can get.
True.
So this stuff is tricky. And so we're not going to cover a lot of the science around it. I think we might do a part two on like how incorruptibility happens. But I'm excited to just talk about this right now. So let's let Dorian inch closer and closer to parasailing takeoff and crack into today's topic with the pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment, brought to you on my end by Aha Black Cherry and Coffee.
My man, I've got a Good and Gather strawberry mango from Target. I would also like to draw attention, though. I see this very fun. I've got a fun koozie in the shape of an alligator or a dinosaur, and it says Myrtle Beach inside of its mouth. Very beachy.
The scariest thing about your alligator koozie is that the mouth is on both sides. It's not like it's almost kind of like a manta ray mouth.
A mouth on both sides. It's my favorite cryptid.
All right, let's crack into it.
Let's do it. That's that good.
I haven't
shit.
Had any real coffee yet today, so this will be nice little pick me up.
Well, thank God you chose Aha. It's naturally caffeinated, and Max, I know what you're thinking. Won't that dehydrate me? Well, here's the thing: it also has electrolytes.
It's very helpful. Over the past week, I have made 3 lemon pound cakes, so I really got to start getting my life in order. Only 2 of them were even remotely edible.
Nice.
Okay. So I grew up thinking that veneration of saints and saint relics and all that stuff was totally normal. But I understand that to someone not raised in like a Catholic or Orthodox church, it might sound totally bonkers. So is this something that you're aware of, Dorian? Like, what do you know about veneration and saint relics?
Next to nothing. I was raised by ex-Catholics. and I have no exposure to any of this stuff. I've like basically just been along for the ride with a lot of what you've shared with catacombs and tombs and stuff, but I have no idea. My knowledge of relics kind of comes from video games using them as special items, but not anything rooted in history or anything at all. I am absolutely a blank slate for this episode. So I don't even know what veneration means. What does veneration mean?
We're going to get into a technical definition of veneration because it gets technical. But I do want to put up the disclosure that I don't think I've ever seen a relic up close. It's not uncommon for churches here in the States to have relics, but as you get further and further west, it gets much less common. A lot of the churches with relics are located on the East Coast, just because they're the older ones. But relics are especially common in mainland Europe. Kind of a cute and fun thing about them is that they tour. So I remember being in Mass when I was a kid and seeing announcements in the church bulletin about like, oh, this relic from Germany is going to be on display at this church downtown for 3 days. So if you want to head over there and go check out this guy's big toe, you should probably do that.
What were the concert posters like for those tours?
It was
big toe headlining.
It was just the white church bulletin with like a serif font with the church address and big toe of Saint Jeff. Big toe of Saint Jeff would probably be a good song. So, Dorian, what I'm going to have you do now is read a Catholic theological definition of veneration written by Mark Miravelli of the Franciscan University of Steubenville, Ohio. But I also want to note that we'll be using veneration throughout this episode. That's what we'll say a lot, as opposed to the more technical term, which is dulia. And the main difference between those two within the Catholic Church is that there is different tiers of worship and reverence for different figures. And dulia is the term for the reverence of saints and relics, which is what we're going to be talking about today for the most part. There's a different tier for Mary, and then a different tier for Jesus and God. So dulia is like the lower tier, and even that's broken up into smaller tiers. So it's going to get very technical.
So it's kind of like Game of Death with Bruce Lee, where he ascends the levels, and like each level is a new, like, tougher opponent, or like the raid. It's basically the same thing as these martial arts movies that I like, right? Because that's my religion, is martial arts movies.
It's surprisingly not that far off, because there's about six layers to this stuff. So,
ooh, yeah. Six bosses. All right, I'll read this. Veneration, known as dulia in classical theology, is the honor and reverence appropriately due to the excellence of a created person. Excellence exhibited by created beings likewise deserves recognition and honor. We see a general example of veneration in events like the awarding of academic awards for excellence in school, or the awarding of Olympic medals for excellence in sports. There is nothing contrary to the proper adoration of God when we offer the appropriate honor and recognition that created persons deserve based on achievement in excellence. We must make a further clarification regarding the use of the term worship in relation to the categories of adoration and veneration. Historically, schools of theology have used the term worship as a general term which included both adoration and veneration. They would distinguish between worship of adoration and worship of veneration. The word worship, in a similar way to how the liturgical term cult is traditionally used, was not synonymous with adoration, but could be used to introduce either adoration or veneration. Hence, Catholic sources will sometimes use the term worship, not to indicate adoration, but only the worship of veneration given to Mary and the saints. If I have to say the word worship one more time, I'm going to explode.
Isn't that those big boats that have guns? Warships?
I was just thinking how worship, just, I keep feeling like I'm saying a deep American Southern version of wash.
Pennsylvanian. Warship.
Yes.
You wash yourself in the crick. So, I didn't want to make you suffer unnecessarily, and I left that last part in because I think it really does highlight how granular and specific this practice gets in Catholic theology. Basically, what they are saying is that the relics, which are being toured around to different churches, those aren't the things being worshipped. Even though it looks like that to people outside the church, what you're really doing is celebrating the deeds that the saint or holy person did with that relic. So, like, this person was really holy, and we have, like, his arm bones, so that's what we're going to use to celebrate his holiness. So, I figured we could kick this off by getting a little deeper into relics themselves, and then we'll move into incorruptibility, which is a whole new, very fun boat. So, relics, by the dictionary definition, are usually the remains of a saint or holy person. You see religions all across the world keeping relics, typically because it allows believers to feel close to someone who was close to God or the deity of that particular belief. Within the overall definition of relic, however, this is where we start getting into the like the raid level subcategories and floors.
Oh, yeah.
So within the overall definition of relic, there are three categories. So I'm going to have you read through the three categories right now.
Third class relics comprise any object that has been in contact with a saint or holy person. This can range from small pieces of cloth to oil collected from lamps burning near major events in the life of Christ. Cloth that was wrapped around the bones of saints, typically known as burial shrouds, are also considered third class relics. Second class relics are items that were owned or used by saints. Rosaries, prayer beads, books, rings, and clothes are all examples of second-class relics. In 1970, a surrealist painter attacked Pope Paul VI, later canonized, and stabbed him in the chest. The Pope survived the attack, and his bloodied undershirt is currently kept by the Vatican as a second-class relic. First-class relics are items directly associated with the life of Christ or the physical remains of a saint. Relics closely associated with a saint's activity in life make them more valuable. Because King Saint Stephen of Hungary was a ruler, his right arm and bracelet are currently on display in Budapest. The head of Saint Thomas Aquinas was severed after his death and saved for years. Saints that served as traveling missionaries typically had their foot bones stored and venerated.
Yeah, so you can kind of see how they're leveled out in order of importance. Like, if a saint stood on a doormat, that would be like a third class relic.
Holy doormat!
Like, the doormat or the ground that he stood on, if they consecrated a church, you know, it's a relic. They stood there.
Just a little third class relic. Nothing too crazy.
A chump relic. and then once you get into the second class ones, this is like kind of the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar of relics, where like they can start to put up a fight. They're getting.
Wait. No. You got that wrong, buddy.
Who is
he? Was the final boss. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was the final boss. The weapons guy was...
Fuck me.
Or wait. We gotta watch Game of Death again. Anyway, the semi-final boss.
Yeah. So the second class relics are like kind of the little guys, the mini-bosses. The Hinox, your Lionel. Those guys...
There you go.
...are the second class relics.
That's a Breath of the Wild reference for people who are not dorks like us.
The Pope Paul VI, who has his shirt categorized as a relic. It's kind of crazy because he was like in an airport and he had like a back condition. So he had to wear a big plastic brace. But to make it look like he wasn't wearing a brace, he would wear like multiple undershirts. So he was basically wearing like early Kevlar, and this guy dressed as a priest came up and stabbed him, and he lived, but then they took his shirt and were like, all right, it's got holy blood on it.
I just love that he wore like 15 tank tops underneath his shirt, and that was enough to prevent him from getting killed.
It's,
respect.
You can see pictures of the shirt online. And when you think about like the stereotypical old Italian guy in the 1960s wearing like a plain white t-shirt, this is exactly it, except it's been stabbed.
The stereotypical, like, it's not the blood, it's a pizza sauce.
Or like Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. The first class relics, these are the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars, the final bosses
there you
of
go.
Relics.
Direct your Calamity Ganon, if you will.
Yeah. If you think that's if you think we've gotten too many Breath of the Wild references in so far, just you wait. But this is where you start getting things that are directly associated with the saints or with Jesus himself. Like Saint Thomas Aquinas was intelligent and he wrote a lot of philosophical and theological works. So they cut his head off and that was what they venerated from him.
Tight.
Oh, here's another one. The arm that Saint Stephen of Hungary, his cutoff arm looks like just Ganon's cutoff arm in the Breath of the Wild 2 trailer.
Perfect.
We got to stop this. I got to stop this. But it's just like sitting in a glass case, like David Duchovny's hand in Zoolander, preserved with like a bracelet and everything around it. It's pretty cool, but you know, you really can't stress how categorized this system is, and for good reason. So before we move forward, can you think of any relics that might be like especially prized or any issues that might arise with keeping relics?
So I know that there's some alleged shroud. I think it's called the Shroud of Turin. That's like supposedly the cloth that Jesus was wearing when he was crucified. I know about that one because there are anime references to it. it pops up in some stuff. God, I'm such a weeb. All of these, though, I mean, they're putting a lot of value on things that naturally decompose, right? Like, how do you preserve all of these severed arms and heads and all this biological matter?
So some of it is just like mummified. Like the arm is just kind of a desiccated, it kind of looks like beef jerky a little bit. But it's on this like really big pedestal, and you can clearly tell that it's like, actually, maybe a better comparison would be the bodies on Everest that we talked about.
Gotcha.
Or like a bog body where it's almost totally dried out, but it still retains some features, but it doesn't look like skin anymore.
Hmm.
But there are relics that are like just actual physical items from quote unquote the life of Christ. And because of that, the history can get a little goofy at times surrounding them. You've got stuff like the Holy Grail, which Indiana Jones had to find. That would be a relic. But sometimes the relics can help us learn quite a bit about the past. Like, did you know that when Jesus was crucified, he was squirming around a ton and it was really difficult to keep him on the cross?
I guess that that maybe goes without saying. I can't imagine it was very comfortable being crucified.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's correct. And because he was so squirmy and it was so difficult, that's why there's 30 holy nails in existence.
30.
And a holy nail, there's 30. Yeah. Holy nail relics are the nails that were supposedly used to nail Christ to the cross. Most depictions put the number at either 3 nails or 4 nails. And there are 30 that people are like, this was the one. So,
yep, sounds about right.
It gets a little murky. Holy nails in particular, the history of those is full of scams. For like a long time in the Middle Ages, scammers would take just regular iron nails and they would paint them silver, and they would go to churches in Europe and be like, hey, I just got back from the Crusades and I pillaged all this stuff, and this nail is one of the nails that was used in the crucifixion. And they would try and sell them at these extreme prices, not only because they were like supposedly used to crucify Jesus, but also they would jack the price up because they turned pure silver after the fact.
Magical. So these, honestly.
Yeah. Like, these churches would get them and be like, it really seems like a nail would have been made of iron or something. And they'd be like, yeah, but
special,
you know,
nails.
It was Jesus, so it turned into silver.
They just started attaching all this mythology on him. He turns all metal to silver, and that was the only way they could kill him because he's also a werewolf.
Like a reverse werewolf. A lot of these claims that churches make about authenticity unfortunately do arise from poor record keeping and scams going back hundreds of years. So the records just get so jumbled that we can't really tell what happened. One of the silliest is a church in Europe that thought that they had St. Peter's brain, which I don't think can really be. It's probably very difficult to preserve a brain anyway. It turned out to be a dried out potato.
Really kind of betrays the fact that they did not know what a brain actually looked like. A really smooth potato, probably.
Yeah. And I mean, you probably got scammed by some guy being like, well, it's very old. Of course, it's not going to look anything like, you know, I could pretty much give you whatever and be like, I don't know.
I guess so. But I feel like a basic fact of like stuff like biological matter getting old does not get less wrinkly over time. It doesn't turn into a smooth, like, you know, like.
That's
these people
true.
Have just never seen what a brain actually looks like.
Yeah, that's
to
that's
be fair. I know they didn't have like medical textbooks handy and charts like illustrating the brain on hand. So fair play to them. They're not total backward ass idiots like you sometimes make out old timey people to be.
Yeah, but it was like wartime. So they could see people get their heads smashed open and stuff.
I suppose so.
You can also go on eBay right now and find a lot of listings for Saint relics, but you're not allowed to sell human remains on eBay. So all these relics are just like the hair of Mother Teresa and stuff like that, which, like, I don't know how you would possibly verify that.
I like the idea that they're posting these and really dancing around the rules, like, this is genuinely the wrist bone of Jesus Christ, but like a scale model of it. But, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Actually, really not. It's not fake. Please give us money.
It's like eBay is seedy, man.
Oh, for sure.
There are other relics, though, which can be difficult to track down for other reasons. Do you know what the holy prepuce is?
No, but it sounds gross.
It's very gross.
I'm excited.
The holy prepuce is what was left behind when baby Jesus was circumcised.
Ew. That's hilarious.
There is a significant Wikipedia article on this subject. Like, it's sizable, but it notes that at one point during the Middle Ages, up to 18 different churches across Europe claimed to have it. Which is problematic for a multitude of reasons. The earliest instance of the holy prepuce was recorded in the year 800, which means, like, for some reason, like, whoever circumcised baby Jesus was, like, scheming and was saving, like, just everything for, like, a side hustle afterwards or something like that.
All right, once I am done with the circumcision, put this in a jar and shut the lid immediately. We're not going to open this for another 800 years.
And, you know, you're hanging out with your family right now, and I'm sure that Myrtle Beach is pretty clear, and you can see a lot of can you see a lot of stars down there? I have no idea, actually.
It's kind of populated, so it's there's a little bit of smogginess. It's not super clear at night. A lot of light pollution, too.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe if you can find a telescope and you and your partner can get out on like the boardwalk or something and you have a telescope, if you look up and see Saturn, then you can let her know the very fun fact that there were claims that when Jesus ascended to heaven, his whole body ascended with him, which means that the holy prepuce ascended and became the rings of Saturn.
There are very few times where you say something and I'm left absolutely speechless, but like, how did people string together this mythology and not just lose their fucking minds laughing hysterically? How did anybody take this seriously?
Like, there are aspects I totally get. Like, in a lot of cultures that believe in a full body resurrection, they, like, won't get teeth pulled or won't have organs removed because the thought is, like, that somehow messes with the full body resurrection.
Right.
Other cultures believe that, like, you know, when you lose your baby teeth or something, those just ascend with you and you're kind of regathered. And I guess if you were really against scammers trying to sell people fake holy prepuces in the Middle Ages, you would make the argument like, well, according to Jewish tradition, like, it's a full body resurrection. So when Jesus ascended to heaven, everything went with them. But I don't know how you jump to like, and then they became the rings of Saturn.
Yeah. This get like, honestly, I keep trying to think of funny things to say, but they're all less crazy than thinking that a baby's foreskin turned into a planet's rings. Nothing I can possibly invent in my head sounds crazier than that. And this is this the Catholic Church, or is this just like some weird sect of it, or like small following of people that buy into this belief?
That's not like official Catholic Church teaching, but in the Middle Ages, there were Catholic scholars who were like, here's what we're thinking. So I don't know, man.
They put their best minds together.
I can't tell if this was the kind of scamming that would have made Jesus like flip a bunch of tables over, or if he would have just been like, hey, you guys are wild.
Yeah, he didn't even bother. He was just like, you know what? Yeah, sure. Whatever. I'm going to go.
That is very gross. But luckily, it's not just like the leavings, like hair and fingernails and teeth, that are venerated as relics. And it's not just the Catholics who do it either. I mentioned incorruptibility at the top of the episode. Are you familiar with what that process is?
Nope. You're speaking a different language to me when you talk about veneration and incorruptibility. I'm a bad Catholic. Enlighten me.
So, when a person dies in Catholicism, to become a saint, there are certain like tests that they can pass. And some of those are like healings, and some of them are, you know, like miracles. Incorruptibility is one of those tests. And that's what happens when like you die and your body doesn't decompose. So it basically fast tracks the person to sainthood. I can't independently verify this because I am not close to any incorruptible bodies, but
that you know of,
that I know of. Supposedly there are some like floral scents, like there's a very specific floral scent that emanates from a body that's incorruptible, and it doesn't smell like a regular rotting body.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
So you just got to go around sniffing people to find out who's incorruptible.
Yeah, and like, I don't know what would make a body smell like that, but maybe it's some sort of miraculous preservation. A lot of the bodies that are incorruptible are like lying in state in churches, but they're wearing like full length robes. And they also usually wear like a wax or plaster mask over the face and the hands, which does make it a little difficult to tell what's happening. But I mean, it's interesting. It's not like the Jeremy Bentham sculpture that we talked about where it was just like a little mango sized head.
Yeah.
And then a wax body.
They were fighting an uphill battle to make him not decompose.
If we ever make it to Philadelphia for like the Motor Museum or something, apparently St. Yes. Peter the Apostle Church has the remains of St. John Newman. And he's been in place since his death in 1860 and is supposedly incorruptible. And I think you can go see his remains.
Man.
I mean, again, though, it's not just the Catholics who do this. And I promise this is going to be the final Breath of the Wild reference that I make. But in Breath of the Wild, there are a bunch of shrines. And at the end of the shrines, there is like a Sheikah monk. And this monk is like a guy that's totally desiccated. And you speak to them and then they give you a reward for solving the puzzle. And then they dissipate. That feature in Breath of the Wild is based on the Shoku Shinbutsu, which is the Japanese term for a living Buddhist mummy.
Huh.
And I've attached a photo of one of these Shoku Shinbutsus in your notes here. Why are you laughing?
Well, I understand everything you've said so far. It's a Buddhist monk in an orange robe, definitely a desiccated body inside of this kind of glass enclosure with kind of gold ornamentation on the wall and pillars. You know, it looks like they did a lot to honor this monk. And I guess I just can't understand why he's wearing Ray-Ban sunglasses.
So this is a picture of a monk named Luang Pho Deng who died while meditating in 1973. The idea behind the Shoku Shinbutsu is that the monk enters a state of meditation so deep that they are able to completely leave their body and remove it from the cycle of decay in this world. Unfortunately, when that happens, you know, this guy's body is pretty intact for being, you know, almost 50 years gone at this point. But the eyes are no longer there. So at one point they did have to put sunglasses over him to prevent the cavitation that happens when the eyeballs disappeared.
All right, look, I want to laugh. I want to make fun of this, but I cannot for two reasons. One, this dude looks cool forever. And that's kind of the dream when you die, right? Is to actually leave behind a good looking corpse. That's impressive. This guy has done it in spades. Total success. Also, you brought up Jeremy Bentham and his weird shriveled mango head. They put glass eyeballs back into his skull after his eyes had rotted out. And thank God they did not do it with this poor monk, because that, to this day, Max, that is still the single most haunting image you have ever shown me. It's from that Jeremy Bentham episode. And those fucking freaky eyes.
I did forget about the eyes. So I guess they really did make the better choice here by just opting for the glasses.
I think so, but yes.
This is like a pretty well-established tradition in some sects of Buddhism, though. According to what I could find, there are currently 24 Shoku Shinbutsu mummies whose bodies remain preserved to this day. And a really interesting thing is that I've seen the argument made that practitioners believe that these monks aren't really dead, but that they are in like an extremely deep trance. I don't know if you asked someone straight up, like, is that person dead? They would probably agree with you. But there is like a sense that, you know, they are preserving their bodies while their souls are departing. And it's like you're moving past this plane.
Hmm.
But this process takes a lot of work. And so there is a like defined way that you should do it, which I'm going to have you read now.
Here's the how to, so you can do it yourself. In medieval Japan, this tradition developed a process for soku shinbutsu, which a monk completed over the course of about 10 years. It involved a strict diet called mokujikigyo, literally eating a tree. The diet abstained from any cereals and relied on pine needles, resins, and seeds found in the mountains, which would eliminate all fat in the body. Increasing rates of fasting and meditation would lead to starvation. The monks would slowly reduce, then stop liquid intake, thus dehydrating the body and shrinking all organs. The monks would die in a state of meditation while chanting a mantra about Buddha, and their body would become naturally preserved as a mummy with skin and teeth intact, without decay, and without the need for any artificial preservatives. Many Buddhist soku shinbutsu mummies have been found in northern Japan and estimated to be centuries old, while texts suggest that hundreds of these cases are buried in the stupas and mountains of Japan. This process of self-mummification was mainly practiced in Yamagata in northern Japan between the 11th and 19th century by members of the Japanese school of Buddhism called Shingon, or True Word. The practitioners of soku shinbutsu did not view this practice as an act of suicide, but rather as a form of further enlightenment.
Yeah, and that's where you get into the idea of like, they're not starving to death, they're merely transferring their soul from this plane to another because they've achieved not needing anything. And that allows their disciples and the other members of their temple to, like what happened with Luangfo Ding, to take their bodies and put them in like a place of honor. And basically be like, hey, this guy made it, you know, he broke the cycle and we should honor and respect him for that. And really, that's kind of where you get into the crossover between Catholic veneration and how you see veneration start coming up in other cultures. It's almost a form of ancestor worship, but in a way that puts more weight on the acts and the holiness of the individual person, and then kind of transfers some of that person's holiness onto like, hey, look, this person was so holy that they didn't even end up decaying after they died like the rest of us sinners and people who are unenlightened. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah,
like just the levels of respect and admiration given in a space that you normally think of as being very like clean and sterile, you know. That's cool.
Yeah, this is interesting to me. You know, from my admittedly very Western perspective, it does raise questions of the dignity of life and ethically, you know, this is a form of suicide. This is a form of taking your own life willingly through a process. So it raises questions for me on a personal level, but at the same time, I do admire this is such a deliberate process. This is like total devotion to your beliefs as a Buddhist. And it's kind of fascinating that there's not this like it seems like with Western relics, we kind of lost the plot a little bit, that they've become magical items culturally, and they've become like the pieces of bodies and clothing that we have are the valuable parts. And it's interesting that you pointed out early on that that was not the intention, that they were like a way of honoring the people that they belong to. But that's really gotten lost in the shuffle. And I think that that's interesting and maybe like forms a bit of a critique of Western culture, that we value things and we value like, you know, the stuff left behind, mm-hmm. and kind of plays into our materialistic tendencies a little bit. Whereas this, it's like, you're left staring at the body of a person who has willed themselves into this state of not decaying. That's really powerful. That's really fascinating. I'm really curious about these, and I would love to see one in person, but they sound kind of freaky too. You know, just an intact, desiccated body. It's pretty wild.
That is very cool. I guess I hadn't really considered the cultural differences there and what Western culture relies on. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's something that it's kind of because I'm a weeb and consume so much stuff from Asian, especially Japanese media and art. I feel like that's one thing that always challenges my perspective as a Westerner and as a Christian, that there's a lot of philosophy and wisdom to be found there of valuing, you know, the environment and valuing like achieving a certain state rather than stuff. You know, that I do think that like this is a cool case study of like you can learn interesting things even just by like learning a little bit about some other culture that's not your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of what our podcast is about from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
Learning about weird stuff that is not from your culture or your background. And it might shed a little bit of light on things that you didn't understand before.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Unless it's about baby foreskins ascending into space and becoming planet rings, I'm gonna confess that I don't really know if there's any wisdom to be gained from that. I'm still a little lost there, a little disturbed. But I don't know. I guess I'll think about it. Maybe.
That might not be the takeaway from this one, but
maybe don't think about that so much.
Yeah. We're done for the week. So, so if you're going to take all anything right from that, take the good stuff.
Don't think about baby foreskins. No. Here's some stuff you should think about. If you enjoy what you heard today, what Max put together for us, thank you, Max, you can support our podcast in a few ways. First and foremost, we love just hearing from you guys. Talk to us. We are on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. I do want to say we've got a couple emails that I've been a little busy, and I'm hoping to respond to this week. So thanks for bearing with us. We do read like all the messages that you guys send, and we really appreciate you guys reaching out. Sorry if I'm a little slow to the draw in replying sometimes. But yeah, talk to us on either of those. We also have a Facebook group if you just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast, and we have a really bumping Discord with all kinds of cool people and interesting conversations and cute animal photos. Yep. And links to good music. So join our Discord. If you message us on one of the avenues that I just mentioned, we'll send you an invite. If you want to financially support what we do, we would really appreciate that. Over on our Patreon, you can pledge an amount to donate each month, even just $1. But if you donate $5 or more, you get access to our bonus episodes. We just dropped an episode about the video game A Mortician's Tale, which was really interesting, really fun for us to go over, and I think it was also kind of a jumping off point for some other stuff that we'll cover in bonus episodes. So if you haven't already and you have access to our Patreon, make sure you listen to that. And if you're not on our Patreon, why don't you consider, just go to patreon.com/predeadboys, take a look, see if the bonus episodes and the wallpapers and all that free stuff, all that fun stuff is you know, worth your money. And if it is and you decide to pledge, we would really appreciate it. But even if you don't, we know the times are tough. Finances are a little stretched these days, what with pandemics and whatnot. You can also just leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. Or better yet, just tell your friends about this show. Spread the word, share on your Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, whatever you use to connect with people that we don't use because we're old and don't understand TikTok. We fear TikTok.
I'm very proud.
Yeah, just spread the word. We really appreciate it. We don't do any advertising. We rely entirely on word of mouth. So that sort of thing is always really appreciated. Yeah, our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Go check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com and look them up on Spotify. They got all kinds of good music. And that's going to do it for us this week. Max, thank you for this enlightening and pleasant distraction from my inevitable fate of getting launched very high up above the ocean. It's time to face the music.
You'll be fine.
It's time to fly. No, I'm looking forward to it. I joke about dying all the time, but I think this is relatively safe, all things considered. Worst case scenario, I'm gonna make the biggest, most badass cannonball you've ever seen in your life. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
I will be tight. You'll make the news, probably.
Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're gonna rot. Tight. Let's record a podcast before I go die on a brutal parasailing accident.
Hopefully not. But I don't trust those things. I don't even know what parasailing. I think I have an idea what parasailing is. We can. I don't know.
Boat pulls you. You have a parachute.
Oh yeah, fuck you, that. No way.
Get this: 300 feet in the air.
Fuck that. Oh.
Right. I'm very scared and excited. But if I die, you got to edit the podcast, all right?
And then I'll just have to imitate your voice for like the next, for the foreseeable future.
Oh, my name is Dorian. With me as always is Max. How you doing, Max? Hi, I'm good. You sound stupid. Oh, I know. I'm always dumb sounding.
I wouldn't do you dirty like that.
Oh, thanks, buddy.